Hello and welcome to Press TV's Debate. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. On February 11th, 1979, a revolution took place in Iran that would shake the world. This is according to many analysts who were not supporters of the revolution but admit to its effect in the region and beyond. We will be taking a look at the Islamic Republic of Iran and its revolution then and now. Stay with us as we deal with this subject on this debate.
Sunday marks 22nd of Bahman on the Iranian calendar year. That's the victory day of the Islamic Revolution 39 years ago, when Iranians led by late Imam Khomeini toppled Pahlavi regime. Each year, Iranians hold nationwide rallies as part of celebrations of the revolution's victory. This year, streets of different cities were packed with groups of demonstrators as well.
Slogans reaffirming support for the Islamic establishment have filled streets of Iranian cities as people from all walks of life hold demonstrations to mark the 39th anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution that brought an end to the US-backed Shah regime.
The capital, Tehran, was no exception. Huge crowds took to the streets to mark the event.
We university students came here to celebrate the 39th anniversary of the Islamic Revolution. We are still on the scene and will do whatever it takes to move this country forward scientifically.
We took part in these rallies to pay tribute to those who sacrificed their lives for the revolution. Once again, we are on the streets to renew our allegiance to our leader.
22nd Bahman rallies are held on the last day of the 10-day celebrations. Known as 10-day dawn, the celebrations are seen as a chance to remind people of the difficulties Iranians endured to make their revolution victorious. Iranians also see 22nd Bahman rallies as an opportunity to stand united with the leader and officials in the face of external pressures, including those by the United States.
I came here in a show of support for my leader and my country and to pay tribute to the martyrs of the revolution.
All this is to support our country and ensure its prosperous future. We are here to say yes, we can, and that the U.S. can't do anything.
At the end of the rallies, demonstrators issued a statement, which, among other things, stressed that the Islamic Republic's security is a non-negotiable issue. The statement also stressed the need for continued work to strengthen Iran's defensive power as a right under international law. Aman Nodiri, Press TV, Tehran.
Well, I'd like to welcome my guest to the program out of Toronto, author and journalists, Mr. Eric Wahlberg, and out of Beirut, journalist and political commentator, Ms. Marwa Osman. Thank you both for being with us. Let's start this off in Toronto, and Eric Wahlberg. Well, 39 years and counting, that's how long ago the Islamic Revolution in Iran has taken place. Do you agree that there are not many countries which could have endured the amount of pressure, sanctions, war and other plots that Iran has had to face? And my main question is, why is it then such a challenge for certain countries like the U.S. and the U.K. to accept an independent revolution when it is the choice of that nation's people?
The Iranian Revolution is actually the beginning of the 14th century by the calendar, the Hijra calendar, 1400. So it's a very important date from a spiritual point of view. And I think the spirituality of the Iranian revolution is what really frightens the West. Because in the same year, 1979, that was when neoliberalism triumphed in Britain, and later with Reagan in 1980. So the West is developed totally on a materialist basis, underdoing any of the morality in the economy that was there because of the alliance with the Soviet Union earlier during World War II that created the need for morality within our own system to fight the morality of the Soviet Union. So that is gone now, and the only country that really has a solid morality in its economic affairs is Iran. So this is the the symbol that really frightens the West, that
okay.
there is an alternative to materialism.
Well, let me get Myra Osman in on this discussion. Well, from 1979 until the present, political leaders and analysts around the world said that this revolution would not last. And now it is 39 years old. What do you think has been the key to the Islamic Republic's survival?
Well, when you see a society that was torn back before the revolution between the traditional society of Iran and the Western modern society that was trying to infiltrate the culture of Persia, if you will, and when you see the poverty and we see the monarchy that was ruling back then, it's only obvious that the people will revolt at some point, especially when you are built or when you are raised on a certain ideology which cannot be separated from Shia Islam, which says that you should not accept oppression and you should fight oppression. This is where it all starts. You have to take the ideology with the conditions, the economic conditions and the political conditions in that country at that point in time. These two conditions played well together to culminate such a great revolution and to keep that revolution alive, because it was some sort of a challenge for the people of Iran to show the world that, yes, they don't want any foreign intervention, but at the same time, when these foreign states retaliate against the Islamic Republic of Iran by sanctions or by trying to corner the state in a way that would not allow it to maneuver economically or with foreign policy, they had some sort of a challenge to show the world and themselves that they can actually do it by uniting, by working together, by enhancing their technology, by enhancing their politics as well, by making a merge of democracy with actual Islamic teachings and development within the country, and using those Islamic teachings as per brought by the great Imam Khomeini to Iran to enhance their social life and their scientific life as well. This proved over the past 39 years that it was not only successful, but it also replaced Iran and relocated Iran as a major power in the region and in the world as well. If you look at the scientific side, if you look at the political side, at the military side, they have managed to pull themselves together very well, considering all the pressure that they were facing.
Well, let's cross over back over to Toronto. Eric, there has been plot after plot against Iran from the very beginning in 8 years, of course, of war by Saddam Hussein's Iraq was imposed on the New Republic. And basically, it was just about all major players in the world against Tehran, and yet Iran did not lose. Again, I want to look at this aspect because, of course, the pressure is still on. What is key from 1979 until now that Iran has been able to be successful in basically defending itself against all these various attempts at overthrowing the Islamic Republic?
One of the reasons that the U.S. Insists it has to overthrow the Iranian Republic is the occupation of the American embassy in Tehran in 1979 by students. And I think that is a good example, actually, of why, of how Iran is a very good country, in the sense that those hostages were all well treated, and it was not a government plot. It was done because embassy was the nest of spies. It was the center of the spy network of the U.S. in the Middle East. So this, I think it's a good symbol for me that it's a very, it's a honest regime with morality. It doesn't kill people in international relations. It tries to find justice, and it tries to find a middle ground. But the U.S. never has accepted the agreement that ended the hostage crisis, and it has just gone on to just demonize Iran, even though it's Iran's policies. If you look at them soberly, they've always been to promote peace. In Afghanistan, it was not part of that Mujahideen movement that resulted in ISIS after 9/11. Iran volunteered to work with the U.S. to overcome terrorism. It was rejected. Today, in Syria, it is working with the Russians, and to a minor extent, the U.S. has to go along with that because the Russians and the Iranians are the ones that are fighting terrorism in Syria. So I think if you just go to any case of foreign policies and you look at Iran's position, it's one of stability, creating a situation of de-escalation. It does not promote war. It's okay. The U.S. that promotes war, that invades countries.
Well, Marva, our guest there in Toronto, mentioned the whole terrorist situation. And I want to look at, because with the rise of Daesh terrorists, we know that Iran has played the role of counterterrorism specialist in the region. Of course, with the help of its allies, Syria, Iraq, Russia, and Hezbollah, Tehran has been successful in basically wiping out this terrorist group from the region. Now, which country in the world would not be happy about Iran successfully fighting against terrorism? Because, as our guest said, previous guest said, Iran continually is being demonized. But if the world is actually against terrorism, and Iran has been so successful in fighting against terrorism, so what is the problem?
Well, the problem is that the U.S. doesn't want the region to stand fast, stand strong, unite together against chaos, against planned chaos, pre-planned chaos, if I may. And Israel, the main proxy, the main ally of the U.S. in the region, has been working on this plan of divide and conquer ever since it was planted in our country by the British colonial system. Now, when you look at such an entity, when such an entity that does not belong to this region or to any region to begin with, if they want to survive, the basic logical thing to do is try to create chaos around them and to ensure their security and their survival. They never tried to befriend the people that they were invading or occupying. They just worked colonial system, imperial system, that like, 101 imperialism. So basically, when you see such a unity coming out of the good politics, the good diplomatic relations between Iran, Russia, Syria, and lately also Turkey, despite the fact that we might have certain issues with the Turkish invasion now of Syria, but still, they all worked together. And in Iran has also other friends like China, for example, in the eastern part of the world. So it managed to create an alliance, a bond with the capitals of this region that could be affected directly by the presence of terrorists who are funded and trained. And that's not me saying, that's the Pentagon and that's the UK also documents that were released that shows that they were Western backed terrorists funded, armed by the West to infiltrate Syria. So when the Iranian foreign policy was aligned with the Russian foreign policy and they saw that in order to save themselves, they should start by saving the countries that were wrecked and were being chaotically invaded with takfiri terrorism like Iraq and Syria. So they worked all together, and we all saw in a matter of a year and a half how the game changed inside of Syria to a point where yesterday we saw the first time in maybe more than 40 years an Arab state downing an Israeli jet over its land, which is a huge result of the cooperation between the Iranian foreign policy and the other players on the ground, which are allied with the Syrian government. So basically, of course, they will be concerned about their existence. They will be concerned about their interests as well. I mean, we saw how the U.S. was bombing Syrian Arab army in Deir ez-Zor last week just because they were afraid that this army might get closer to their areas that they are occupying. And they blatantly say it was self-defense. They are the occupation, the occupying force in Syria, and they say we bombed the government forces because we're defending ourselves. So
well,
Iran would stand against
stay
that.
With me, please.
Russia would stand against that. That would make U.S. and Israel a bit frightened.
All right. Well, Eric, do you think that Iran has been able to expose the hypocrisy of Western governments, of course, which say they represent human rights, but on the ground we have definitely seen something else. when it comes to their relationship with Tehran, for example, if we compare it with the way that an entity like Israel is treated or like Saudi Arabia is treated?
Oh, it's an uphill battle. It's something that we are people that can see the reality on the ground. We have to speak up, and it's very difficult to do that. But I count on my allies here, and I count on Iran to keep having a measured, wise policy internationally that you can defend as the way forward. And I like to quote when Gandhi was asked, what do you think of American democracy? And he said, I think it would be a very good idea.
Right, yes.
So I think indeed. If you understand the sense that it's not, it's a pretend democracy, and the real democratic forces, I think, are the forces that are being demonized and pilloried. No one's perfect, but I think that Iran really has played a very positive role since the revolution, 39 years, and I look forward to it continuing to grow in stature in the world around.
Well, Marva, I want to look at, you know, Iran has gone from basically being an American puppet to definitely a force to be reckoned with in the region and in the world, diplomatically, politically, militarily. For those, especially younger people, that may not be quite aware, a quick contrast, the Iran of prior to the revolution and the Iran of today.
Well, if you look at it, you can understand why it was actually causing paranoia in the West, mainly in the U.S., which was the main leader of the Iranian foreign policy at the time of the Shah. I mean, they were literally running the country, just as your guest in Toronto was saying, that the embassy, the U.S. embassy in Tehran, was basically a compound for spies. It was a compound for espionage and a compound for politics or for inducing the U.S. beneficiary politics within the system of the Iranian regime. So when that was broken by Imam Khomeini and the leaders of the revolution in 1979, it definitely switched the situation 180 degrees. It changed the entire system. It cleaned the system out of the remnants of the intervention, mainly the Western intervention. And if you look at that time to begin with, if you look at the allies of the Shah as well, I mean, the U.S. was actually the patronage of the Shah, but the Shah was also leading the Gulf politics as well. They basically leaned to his knees. They would basically bow down to him. He was their leader. In the region, in the Middle East, and everything shifted, the powers shifted, the institutions were reversed, everything was for the people, literally for the people, after it was stolen from them. The wealth was stolen from them. Their freedom was stolen. So it switched 180 degrees. It's like literally watching a new movie when you're watching one at a second, just switching the TV. This is how dramatic the change was in Iran. And what's even more interesting is that change did not take that much of a time. It shows that the people wanted this change. They were eager and yearning for this change, especially the poorer parts of or the poorer groups of Iran who migrated to the cities and found themselves living in slums because of the Shah regime's policies against them and because of stealing their wealth. So they became the power of the revolution. They became the energy of the revolution. Of course, you have a leader as charismatic, as powerful as Imam Khomeini, who brought the people justice, who taught them that if you want to be true to your country and true to yourself and basically win both your life and your afterlife, you have to work hard. And this is what happened. This doesn't mean that Iran was not a prosperous nation before the revolution. It was, but it was at the expense of the people. And that's what the revolution changed. It brought the people back at the front page, okay, at the front stage, at the basic needs for the people were solved. Everyone was given their rights, especially women.
All right. Well, Eric, of course, during these 39 years, as I have mentioned, Iran has been under sanction after sanction, 8 years of war, basically the whole world, as I said, against it. Despite that, or perhaps because of that, we've seen a noticeable change inside of the country. Literacy rates at the time of the revolution were less than 50%, now over 97%. Unbelievable accomplishments in various fields, the science, the technical areas, and other areas. I want to talk about how important it is for Iran to be able to be self-reliant in order to survive another 39, 40 years, in your perspective.
It's very impressive if you visit Iran to notice that all of the goods you're buying, I didn't see one when I visited Iran, I looked and I didn't see anything made in China. Here in Canada, everything you buy is made in China. So it was very, made me feel good to know that Iranians are producing their own matches, their own clothes, their own shoes, their own arms, their own cars. They are self-reliant, and that's very important for a country, not only to avoid the sanctions, but to provide a sense of dignity of the people.
Okay. And 1 minute, Marva, closing statement. I'm so sorry, Eric. 1 minute, Marva. Key to Iran's not only survival, but prosperity.
Well, I'm sorry, I don't want to sound biased, and I don't want to sound a bit much of a caller for Shia Islam, but I cannot separate both. I cannot separate the journey of Imam Hussein with that of Imam Sayyid Khomeini. I mean, the journeys are packed with the teachings of Shia Islam. It's packed with stop oppression, fight for the people, give the people rights, prosper all together, and let the community rule. This is the essence of the revolution. If we cannot see that, then we cannot understand how this revolution has changed Iran within, inside of Iran, internally and externally. Okay. If we cannot see how that is linked and undivided, then we cannot understand why Imam Khomeini is a charismatic leader and why Imam Ali Khamenei is actually the successor of that leader.
All right. And on that note, we'll have to end the program. Appreciate both of you being with us out of Toronto. Author and journalist Erica Wahlberg, and out of Beirut, journalist and political commentator Marva Osman. And as always, we appreciate you being with us on another debate. I'm Marzia Hashimi, signing off for myself and all the crew right here in Tehran. See you next time.